Radio Prague News.
The Social Democrats are threatening to quit the coalition government if an alleged anti-Semite joins the Czech News Agency Council. Chinese authorities have postponed the Prague Philharmonic's scheduled tour of that country over a political rift with the Czech capital's mayor, and the Czech Center's annual meeting is now underway, with the 30th anniversary of the Velvet Revolution topping the agenda. Social Democrats party chairman Jan Hamáček told journalists on Monday that his party could withdraw from the coalition government if its senior partner, ANO, votes to elect far-right journalist Michal Semin to the council of state news agency ČTK. Semin, who has blamed American elites for the 9/11 terror attacks, heads the ultra-conservative movement Akse Dost. Last week, the Jewish Federation protested against his candidacy, citing his alleged anti-Semitic remarks. Semin's candidacy for the ČTK Council was proposed by the far-right opposition Freedom and Direct Democracy Party. Hamáček told journalists that Semin was backed by ANO deputies in a first-round vote earlier in June. However, later on Monday, Prime Minister Andrej Babiš, ANO's chairman, said his party had not supported Semin's candidacy and would not back him in the future. Mr. Babiš said he did not understand why Hamáček had said what he did, calling it a nonsense. The Prague Philharmonic Orchestra announced on Monday that its planned tour this September of China will not take place. It said that Chinese authorities had postponed the concert tour indefinitely without providing an explanation. But earlier, they had threatened to do so over statements by Prague Mayor Zdeněk Hřib this spring in support of Taiwan and Tibet. After being elected mayor in November, he pushed to remove a clause in a sister city agreement between Prague and Beijing, stating that Taiwan is Chinese territory, in line with the communist country's One China policy. The Ministry of Defense is looking to spend nearly 1 billion crowns to replace the country's aging fleet of tanks and some 2.3 billion crowns to buy two military transport aircraft. Minister of Defense Lubomir Metnar presented details about the proposed purchases to the government on Monday. The Ministry of Defense wants to buy 33 upgraded Czech versions of the Soviet-made T-72 battle tank and two new CASA transport aircraft. Directors of all Czech centers, which are agencies of the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, charged with promoting the country abroad, are now holding their annual week-long meeting in Prague. Topping their agenda are preparations to mark the 30th anniversary of the Velvet Revolution this November. Czech center directors will also discuss a new program strategy to effectively highlight accomplishments of Czech scientists and to deepen cooperation with foreign universities and teach the Czech language abroad. Some 40,000 people attended this year's Prague Quadrennial. That's the world's largest exhibition of performance design and theater architecture. Organizers said on Sunday that the Golden Triga Prize for Best Exposition was awarded to a team of authors from North Macedonia for their project This Building Truly Talks. Prague Quadrennial was established in 1967 to bring the best of design for performance, scenography, and theater architecture. Police raided a large-scale illegal cigarette factory near Liberec at the weekend and have detained a foreign national on charges of tax evasion. A spokesman for a special police unit for fighting organized crime said agents had seized 9 tons of raw tobacco. The accused planned to import machinery and raw tobacco to expand the illegal cigarette production line, police said. In sports news, the handball players of the year have been announced. They are national goalkeeper Martin Galia and national team captain Iveta Luzumova. Galia, who in the regular season plays for Górnik Zabrze, received the honor for a second time. Luzumova, a striker for Thuringia HC, defended her title and has now received the honor 4 times. And finally, the weather. Tuesday should be sunny and warm in the regions of Bohemia and Vysočina, with rain and possibly even thunderstorms likely in Moravia. Daytime highs should range between 25 to 29 degrees Celsius. I'm Brian Kennedy, and that's the news for now.
Hello and welcome to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio.
Coming up in today's program, a new trial puts the spotlight on communist-era involuntary emigration. An unknown Czech has won €50 million jackpot just before the expected arrival of a new legislation taxing lottery winners. And later we meet Dr. Miloš Krajný, a fresh recipient of the Gratias Agit Award for promoting Czech music in his adopted country, Canada. All that coming up, so please stay with us. A court case in Prague will this week put the spotlight back on a notorious communist secret police operation in which opponents of the regime were harassed so terribly that in many cases they abandoned their native Czechoslovakia. The victim in this instance was a woman with three small children. Ian Willoughby has the details.
In the late 1970s, communist Czechoslovakia secret police, the STB, began carrying out a brutal policy against dissidents. Under Operation Asanatsa, or Clearance, the STB used violence and psychological pressure to make such people's lives so unbearable that they eventually accepted offers to leave the country. On Tuesday, a court in Prague will begin hearing a criminal case taken against three ex-STB officers by one such victim, Ivanka Lefevre, a Charter 77 signatory. Following many years of mistreatment, she felt she had no alternative but to leave Czechoslovakia in 1982 with her husband and three small children. She settled in France and still lives in the country. Former STB officer Milan Kopenets, who was assigned to Ivanka Lefevre and is one of the men on trial, told newspaper Deník N that he had no recollection of her, which made it impossible to defend himself. The plaintiff will be represented in court by historian Petr Blažek of the Institute for the Study of Totalitarian Regimes. He describes Operation Clearance as one of the most abhorrent things done to opponents of the communist regime in the 1970s and 1980s.
Byla to celostátní akce, která byla řízená, bych řekl, hierarchicky skutečně.
It was declared by an order of the Minister of the Interior, Jaromír Obzina. It affected hundreds of people, including the victims' families. Frequently, it was a complete turning point in their lives. They had to sell everything and leave their families and friends behind. They moved to countries where they often started with nothing and may not have known the language. Often the families fell apart in that new environment. People didn't know communism would end, and they thought they were leaving forever.
Blažek says this campaign of forced emigration is one of the best documented operations carried out by the STB.
Violent methods were frequently used in persuading people to leave. They were driven into the forest or beaten during interrogations. Women were assaulted in their homes at night or on the street. The victims were stripped of their citizenship, a process they had to pay for. They also had to pay for the education they had received. They often sold their property below its value just to have some money and were only allowed to take certain things with them.
Ivanka Lefevre kept thorough records of her own case and published a book, Migration 1982, about her experiences. Her case is being heard by the Prague One District Court.
Ian Willoughby with that report. An unknown individual has made headlines in the Czech Republic after the country's prime betting company Sazka announced that the winner of a Europe-wide lottery's billion-crown jackpot was Czech. His luck may be seen by some as twofold because the win came before the expected arrival of new legislation taxing lottery winners. Tom McEncrow has more.
It is the fairy tale every European wishes for, and last week it happened in the Czech Republic. An anonymous man won the Eurojackpot lottery, instantly earning some €55.2 million, which translates to 1.4 billion crowns, an astronomical sum that even the most successful business owners will hardly have a chance to reach in their lifetimes. Václav Friedman, the head of the Czech Republic's betting agency Sazka, which pays out the winnings in the country, says his company is aware who the lucky man is and that he claimed his winnings on Friday. As is the norm when winning very high jackpots, the individual also has the right to a financial advisor and a psychologist. The bet was placed from an online account, which means that there is little risk of the winner realizing their luck too late, Mr. Friedman told Czech Radio.
When the lottery bet is placed online, we already know their details. This means that their full name and birth certificate is already known to us. We have already agreed with the winner that we will look into the details together on Monday. He said he wants to have some time to think about everything and realize properly that he is now a billionaire.
The current deadline for claiming one's winnings extends to 1 year from the victory, but it used to be just 32 days. 4 years ago, in 2015, another Czech Eurojackpot winner from the Pardubice region nearly missed out by waiting until only 4 days ahead of deadline day before he made his claim. He ended up entering a Prague Saska office with a rucksack, immediately taking 250,000 crowns in cash, as well as providing a list of bank accounts into which to send the 2.5 billion crowns he had won. Last week's winner is perhaps even luckier, because he won 2 weeks after the government approved a new bill, which would set a 15% tax on lottery winnings. If it passes through Parliament, the legislation is likely to become active from January 2019. Had it been in place now, the winner would have had to pay some 211 million crowns to the state. The Eurojackpot is a transnational European lottery, which was first launched in March 2012. It is active in 18 European states, and the Czech Republic joined in 2014. It has since had those two winners.
Tom McEncrow with that report. Just a reminder that you are listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio. Dr. Miloš Krajní has been living in Canada since around the time of the Soviet-led invasion of Czechoslovakia. But last week he was here in Prague, where Ian Willoughby spoke to him for this edition of One on One.
Dr. Miloš Krajní is one of a number of people who have just received the Gratias Agit, the Czech Foreign Ministry's award for those who promoted the good name of the Czech Republic abroad. A highly successful expert on allergies and immunity in his professional life, he has also devoted a lot of energy to advancing Czech music in Canada, the country that he's called home since 1968. Dr. Krajní was born in 1941, and when we spoke, I first asked him what, if any, were his recollections of the war.
Well, I have two episodes from the war, maybe three. One day, I don't know if I remember that actually, if I've heard it from my parents, there was supposed to be bombing of my town, Kroměříž, which had some industry, and I might have been two and a half, 3 years old, and parents forgot me on the second floor of the house, and they went into the cellar. And then my mother apparently said, where is Miloš? And so my father ran up and brought me down. So that's probably I have from my parents, because it was a big scare. And the second episode, when the Germans were pushed out, they put gasoline on the castle. Kroměříž is a big castle where Amadeus was filmed. And they put the tower on fire. And it was about 3 o'clock in the morning, my parents woke me up and they said, you have to see this, what Germans done to us before they left, and you will never forget this in your life. And I never forgot that.
Your father was a doctor also. Did he have to look after soldiers at that time?
Yes, we were in our house in the basement or cellar, and we had sort of metal plates in front of the window, so if there was some shooting, it wouldn't get through, and it was sort of unwritten sign when somebody banged on the metal sign that it was usually a soldier who was injured either side, and my father would open the door and basically I would peek behind somebody to see the blood coming out of the stretcher, or and he had to attend.
And do you remember anything of the communist takeover in 48? You would have been, I guess, 6 or 7 years old.
Well, I don't remember specifically, because at that time children are not interested in politics, but only what I've heard from my parents, you know, that it wasn't a very happy time, because my parents actually did have visa to Britain to leave after the war. My mother had a friend who was a doctor, and they had some kind of signs because she was informing him where the Germans are during the war. So she would write something on the postcard and he would know they had this special alphabet. And he arranged for whole family visa. He said it will not be good in Czechoslovakia because Russians will come and they'll take over. In last minute, my parents decided not to emigrate because of the grandparents. And I think they did regret it all life.
You began studying medicine in Olomouc in the late 1950s. Did politics have much impact on your studies?
Well, in 58 I graduated from high school. I was second best and I couldn't get to medicine because I was from bourgeois family. But my father did find some way through with some patients that I was admitted to university 4 days before it started in September. Basically, I had not much problem except one professor who was very high-ranking communist and he probably knew about this, so I had very hard time to pass his exam. Otherwise, it was smooth.
And did you have to attend lessons in, I don't know, Marxist ideology?
Yes. First year, political economy. Second year, Marxism-Leninism. And that was very hard to study because, you know, some professors would take it just like a sport. They wouldn't really drill you on some questions because obviously we didn't study it. We hated it. But some were very tough and you had to pass.
Also, I saw an earlier interview with you in which you said that some of the teachers you had in Olomouc were on a kind of communist blacklist, but they still got to teach you.
Well, there were some professors who somehow stayed at university despite their political differences with the party, because, you know, there wasn't enough good teachers, and they were even, some of them were even saying jokes, political jokes during the, you know, which was risky, but they did, and we loved them.
What drew you to your field in medicine, which is allergology and immunology?
When I was about 5 years old, my mother would get terrible cramps in the stomach and they would take her to the hospital and didn't know what to operate on, stomach, gallbladder. And my father told her after 2 months, you have allergy to strawberries because whenever you go to the garden and have strawberries, you have cramps. So as a child, you know, it stick to my head, allergy, what it is, some people don't get sick, some do. So I, as an oldest son, I knew I am destined to be a medical doctor, which I didn't mind. And then allergy was my first choice.
One thing that happens here in the Czech Republic still is that people give gifts to doctors. I presume that happened even more in the communist period.
In the communist period, the doctors had a very low salary. And basically, night calls were for free. It was a part of the medicine and medical care about patients, which when I came to Canada, you know, it was unheard of because it was actually even funny, like as a doctor, that somebody would bring you half a dozen eggs because, you know, it costed a few cents. But here it was part of it. And I remember my father had a private practice and he would treat patients during the war for free because they had no money. And these patients, maybe after the war, when communists took over, they would bring a chicken or pheasant. And the communists had an informer across, and they were writing down a number of people. And at the end of the year, the government said, you have to pay tax on these presents. We don't know what they brought you, but there was 55 people coming to your house. That cost you $50,000.
They could maybe give back, you could give back like five chickens or something.
No, that was terrible, you know, because my father did it for free. He was a humanist.
You have two brothers. What do they do?
I was the oldest one. My younger brother went to study technical engineering in Brno. And in 68, I left to Canada. He left for Austria. He had a girlfriend here who was a very, very close friend to Hanna Maškova, our figure skater. And she didn't want to go. So my brother left alone, and then he got married in Germany, and he's actually here visiting me now. We're meeting in 2 hours. And my youngest brother studied piano because he had a perfect pitch, and he was at AMU, at the university, during the invasion, and he was the only one who was left behind. In Toronto, we had a Czech conductor, Karel Ančerl, and I wrote him a letter. I said, look, my brother is studying piano. Would you advise him to emigrate to Canada so I can help him out? And that time, Karel Ančerl wrote a letter. It's in a few days. I never knew him, but he answered right away. He said, look, your brother has to finish the school at Prague, and if he's a good pianist, he'll be able to go abroad even during communists. And he was right, because I met my brother 6 years later in the States when he was playing with Prague Chamber Orchestra.
Why did you choose Canada to move to?
One of my former professors from experimental physiology was working at French University of Montreal, and he advised me to ask for postgraduate fellowship. So he made me sort of think about Canada, and he wrote to me how to make the application form, that I should send the photo picture with very bright eyes because Professor Sellier likes it. And I got the position then. So when the Russians came, the decision was made, basically.
Did you see your parents again after that?
My parents were told, because I was sentenced in absentia for 2 years to prison, that I didn't return back home, and my parents were told that they will never be allowed to visit me. But then after the Helsinki European meeting, it got a little bit loose, and my mother visited me after 10 years.
You're known for your great love of music. Where does that come from?
I think it comes from my mother, because my mother was a very good pianist on highest amateur level, and my youngest brother had perfect pitch. And I was studying piano and violin. I have still my violin in Canada. I played in Montreal because I found a Japanese colleague who played piano, and we played Dvořák and Smetana. But I haven't played since. Since he left back to Japan, we didn't play. And we had a very good parental education at home with private teachers and music.
And how did you get involved in putting on concerts in Toronto?
You see, in Montreal, when I left, I was 26. And I was more interested in sort of light music and Tina Maria, And in Montreal, I suddenly started to miss Czech classical music, New World Symphony, Mavlast. And so parents were sending me LPs. And when I moved to Toronto from Montreal, a friend of mine asked me to join Mozart Society on the board. And from that position, I joined Music Toronto and other organizations until I started to make community concerts for the Czech community.
When you have run those concerts, do you get a lot of interest, a lot of people coming?
Well, this was a big question before I started 2001, whether people will be interested. And you know, it went very well initially. We had lots of subscribers because I mix classical music and jazz. And, in last few years, we do have problem to attract young people. The older generation is getting sick or is disappearing from this world, and we don't have replacements.
But last year you organized a concert at the Church of St. Wenceslas, yeah, celebrating the centenary of Czechoslovakia.
Well, I organized one concert for 90th anniversary, and that was very successful. Together with Czech consul Peter Mikiska, we had Panocha Quartet and my brother. And this year I spoke to the consul general Ivan Počuch, and he was very enthusiastic about the idea, and he said he'll help us organize it. And we had Zemlinsky Quartet with Slavka Wernerová piano, and great success, again, sellout. So it was very good celebration.
You've had a very successful life in Canada. Have you ever considered what kind of life you would have had if you'd stayed here?
Well, you know, that's a question which came up in 1989, whether it was actually smart to leave Czechoslovakia after the Russian invasion. And more I was coming here, I somehow came to the conclusion that the decision was correct. If I would stay here, I probably would do, well, I would of course do allergology, and I would be involved in some kind of music, and it probably would be similar, especially after 89, because we have freedom and everything is here. We can get anything like in the West.
And my final question is, just before we started recording, you told me you are planning to have a class reunion on this visit back here to the Czech Republic.
Yes, I graduated from high school in Kroměříž in 1958. And I don't come, we're meeting about every 5 years. And last year, because it was a rounded anniversary, I suggested, I said, look, we're getting older, maybe we should be meeting every year. And so it is, they're meeting again, and we usually have, our class was 28, now we about 14 people meet, because about 5 is not among us, and not everybody comes. but it's usually very nostalgic and very nice.
Dr. Miloš Krajní, one of the fresh recipients of the Gratias Agit Awards, was Ian Willoughby's guest in that edition of One on One. And that brings us to the end of our program here on Radio Prague. If you have any comments about the program, then please send them to us. You can contact us by email at english@radio.cz or on Facebook and Twitter. But that's all for now from me, Ruth Franková. Thank you very much for joining us and goodbye.